show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, founder of the UK charity Yes to Life and regular host for the show, which focuses entirely on integrative medicine for cancer and its potential to improve quality of life and treatment outcomes. My guest on the show this week is a bit of a regular who never fails to share plenty of pragmatic wisdom on nutrition and cancer, being herself someone who's had cancer as well as 2 decades of experience in supporting people with cancer nutritionally. Today, Kirsten Chick is going to be exploring the effects of the seasons on our well-being and the many ways in which nutrition can support us through the year. Hi Kirsten, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome back.
Hello Robin, fantastic to be back.
So, today we're going to be talking about seasonal change and how it can affect us. Of course, here in the UK, we're totally obsessed with the weather and we move seamlessly from too cold to too hot. But is the change of season something that genuinely affects our well-being in a measurable way, or is it just something for us Brits to complain about?
Really good question. Well, it's not us, just us Brits that have noticed it. So it's very much written into Chinese five elements theory in Oriental medicine, in Ayurveda. It's, you know, people have noticed for millennia around the world that we have seasonal influences. And that they affect how we feel, how we behave, what kind of things are more appropriate. And even if we consider ourselves to be not very in touch with these things, most people at about this time of year stop wanting so many salads and start wanting more cooked and warm food.
It's true.
I think there is something in it. When I say this time of year, this in this season, wherever you are, of course, in the UK, we have quite clear seasons. Somewhere like California, for example, it's not as clear. We don't have the seasons that we have here, but there will still be some influence. So climate, season, your environment definitely has an influence on your body, how your body responds to where it is, and therefore your health.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we just come out of a brief but intense spell of summer, crazy high temperatures, and now it's September, which you think of maybe as a great time to holiday in the UK, but actually it's pretty well perishing here. Definitely autumnal. Presently, everyone's kind of dreading a hard winter with the rocketing energy prices. One thing that's increasingly obvious, though, is that we're facing more extremes than we're used to. Is it possible to predict what effects this is likely to have on our physiology and our mental well-being?
Yeah, I think it's very unsettling on physical, mental, emotional levels, actually. And I think usually the changes in season and changes in weather unsettle us anyway. Mm-hmm. So in the UK at springtime and in autumn time, when things very much change, we feel that transition. We feel that mentally, psychologically, emotionally, and at this time of year, the Chinese were very astute at noticing that this time of year is often about letting go and sadness and grief, and it's physically we're going to let go of any kind of toxins or excess that we don't want to carry into winter with us. It's a good opportunity to do that. So naturopathically, we might talk about having a really good acute at this time of year, like a nice cold or something to help get everything out of the system and have a good old clear out, and then a similar spring clean at the end of the winter. But that's really kind of, it's sometimes induced, I think, by the fact that the changes in temperature can be quite turbulent. So in the UK at the moment where I am, one day seems to be quite warm and the next day quite cold, and that kind of hot cold, it's a bit like the sauna routine where you're going from hot to cold. Yeah. It gets the lymph moving, it gets the blood moving, it gets our body releasing. So if we are If things are kind of quite free and flowing in our bodies generally, and we haven't got too much stuff built up over time, like toxins and waste and emotions and all sorts of things, then it's going to be a nice time to have a little gentle let go of things. But if we've got a lot going on, if we're quite stuck, if we've got a lot that's built up, if we live in a particularly toxic environment, which let's face it, most of us do these days, then that's going to be a little bit rougher. And if those hots and colds are more extreme, it's going to be rougher still. It's going to be, I often describe transitions of seasons like spring and autumn as when the tide turns. Whoever lives by the sea may have noticed that at the times of day when the tide turns, the sea gets a little bit choppy, it might get a little bit windy, and then it calms down again. It's the same with the change of seasons, and that choppiness we can, if we're well placed to surf those waves or kind of stay buoyant in that choppiness, that's great. But if we're not, or if it's particularly turbulent, then we can struggle. And I think those extremes can make it more turbulent.
Well, one of the sort of virtues of Britain, in a way, is its kind of moderateness, in as much as we don't really get earthquakes, we don't really get typhoons. We actually avoid a lot of the extremes that we hear in the news all the time. But that's becoming less true, and looks set to become even less true. Quite fundamentally unsettling for the psyche, I think, of the British, particularly, who think they're in a good place for this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, as much as we moan about the weather and it keeps us on our toes a little bit, you're right, we are very used to not having to deal with the extremes of it. And when extremes happen, we fall apart. We can't deal with it, whether it's a particularly heavy snowfall, floods, we just don't have the infrastructure and often the mental capacity to deal with that.
So we're going to need to beef up a bit.
Yeah, we are. But we can learn. We can learn from we can develop our own inner resilience, whether mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, on all of those levels. And we can learn from people who have lived for millennia in countries where those kinds of things do happen. But obviously there's a lot that needs to happen with our infrastructure to support that, and we don't always have immediate control over that.
Okay, so I wonder if we could run through the key understandings we have about the ways that we as humans respond to the four different seasons, starting with spring, of course.
Yeah, actually, I might just borrow from Chinese five elements and extend that to five seasons if I,
Five seasons.
yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Sounds very un-British, but we'll do it.
But yeah, two of them kind of merge in a little bit. So spring is our time of awakening and shooting up and growing, just like plants. So in the winter, we've been very calm and we've sown a few seeds. In the spring, they start to grow and pop their heads above the surface. So there's this energy of appearing, emerging into the world again, getting a little bit more active. More movement, more sociability, and that kind of growth development. So the plant growing and this kind of upwards energy, if you like. So it's a time when we emerge from winter and we have some more movement, and we might feel that there's more energy as well. A lot of people love the spring because it's more hopeful, more energizing. We've got a summer ahead of us. It's starting to get warmer, and that warmth also gives us a bit more energy. The light has all sorts of fantastic impacts on us, and we're getting more light in the day. So that gives us more energy and it makes us feel mentally stronger. And everything just seems to kind of function a little bit better. Unless, of course, we've struggled with the transition into spring, then it might take a while to get going. But once we're there, generally it feels it feels like life is a bit easier. Summertime, well, we've got that again, less reliably in the UK, but we're in that heat, in that warmth, in that time where the plants have grown and now they are flowering. It's our time of creativity. And we are a lot more active. We have a lot more light, a lot more energy, and we can use that to be a lot more creative, whether it's with projects, or, we can think of plants, as I said, the flowers and so on forming, and really blooming. So this is our chance to bloom as well. Late summer, this is the extra bit I'm throwing in, is late summer.
Okay.
This is where the flowers turn to fruit. So we this is the it's harvest time, but it's where we can harvest the fruits of that creativity. So we can really feel like, yeah, we've actually achieved things, we've produced things, and we can nourish ourselves and others with those things that we've produced. So just as we can nourish ourselves with regardless, we can nourish ourselves with the fruit and vegetables that we've produced. We can also nourish ourselves with the fruits of other projects and things that we've been working on. Autumn, that's when we let go. So we think about the plants letting go of their leaves, or the kind of any dried up berries that haven't been eaten, any apples that have fallen to the floor. We've not needed them to nourish us, they've been excess. So we can let them fall to the ground and nourish the planet instead. And this is quite an interesting point because we don't want to carry those rotten apples into winter with us. Winter's quite a still time, and we don't want to be stagnant with rotting fruits. We want to be clear going into winter so we can use that time to reflect, to plant seeds for the future. But if we've got all of these things that we've produced in our lives, these things that have we've nurtured in our lives, but there's more than we need. If we hold on to them out of some kind of fear, then that's exactly what we're doing. We're carrying rotten apples into the winter with us. But if we actually let go, then they can nurture someone else, or the universe, or the earth, or some, insects, or whatever. And this is an interesting thing about grief. There's been a huge outpouring of grief recently, and people have been affected by Queen Elizabeth's death in different ways. People who are not royalists or don't really care much about the monarchy have found themselves being sometimes swept up or triggered, I suppose. It brings up
Right.
loss and grief and sadness when a whole nation is expressing it, and it's on the television and media around you all of the time. And it's been quite timely, actually, because this is a time for letting go. And that's quite hard. We don't want to let go of anything that we love, whether it's things or aspects of ourself. Whether it's jobs, people, emotions, all sorts of things, weight sometimes, patterns of behavior, patterns of eating, patterns of exercising. We get into these, we get used to having these things around us, and we draw comfort from having these things in our lives. And if we recognize that they don't serve us anymore, and we need to let go, we need to feel comfortable in letting things go. We need to feel kind of safe enough to let a few things go and not like the whole world's going to collapse if we do that. So if we go back to late summer, where we've got our fruits and we feel really supported and nurtured and really well looked after by the world because we've produced these fruits and we've got lots of things to nourish us. We feel pretty grounded and earthed at that time. If we've done that bit well, then it's easier to let go of what we no longer need.
UK Health. Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
So, if people are struggling at this time, then I often look back to just what the gifts of the season before. And so I'm doing a lot of work with people nutritionally at the moment, to help them feel grounded and supported and safe enough to let go and move forward. I'm hearing a few people saying that they're feeling stuck at the moment. It's quite difficult to move forward. And it's that bit often isn't in place. And then things can flow a lot more easily. And it might be something really obviously physical, like constipation. It really might be something that obvious, or just being really bunged up and congested, or it just might be a sense of feeling stuck, of things not moving forward. It might be the same old thing, whether it's a physical health pattern or something else, just coming up again and again and again and again, and just feeling stuck there. And often here at this point, putting in those places, things that help us to feel grounded and earthed, can make such a difference.
Right. Okay.
Ideally, we then move into winter. We've kind of freed ourselves up. We've got what we need, but we haven't got anything excessive weighing us down. And we can go into a calmer, stiller space. And I always think of those images on Christmas cards where you've got some kind of pond or lake or river that's frozen, and you've got this lovely kind of snowy scene, and it's all very still and calm, and maybe there are a couple of trees with bare branches, but the lake or the whatever it is isn't frozen solid. If you were to bring the picture alive and go to the bottom, there's a lot of activity. The water is still flowing there. There's a lot of stuff happening. The same with the trees. They're not dead. It's just all the activity is in the roots. So winter isn't a time to stop completely and stagnate or completely freeze up. It's a time where there's still movement, but it's much calmer and much stiller. And it's a time to really reflect on what's happened over the year, plan for the future. And to do that, again, we need to feel kind of snuggly and safe, or safe enough to do all of that. If we're terrified about where the next meal is coming from, am I going to be able to pay my bills, what's going on in the world, then we're going to go into a freeze response. And that in the middle of winter can, you know, that's not great. It's not great at any time, but in the middle of winter. Really not helpful.
Right. Okay, interesting little journey there. So we seem to be much along with the plants most of the way from your description in terms of what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've had a few shows, including last week's, that have focused on circadian rhythms. And it's clear that more and more is being revealed about the ways in which we're tied to the rhythm of the day. and how we stray from that at our own peril. The most obvious examples being kind of night shift workers and international flight crews. The seasons, of course, have a far longer arc, but nonetheless, it is a cycle, it's a rhythm. So what's known about our need to adhere to this cycle? For example, has anyone studied what happens to those who travel to avoid winter? They've got, say, a second home nearer the equator. Has anybody looked to see what happens to those people?
Ah, that's a great question. And I think it's exactly the same in that, you know, we do respond to those seasons. And if we try and live outside of those seasons, it can be really difficult. I don't know if there's been much research on all of this. I'm going to go and look it up after our chat now, because it's a really interesting line of research. I have worked with so many people over the years, though, who have done exactly that. They've sought out hotter, drier weather in the winter because England is too cold and damp for their body. So this is another thing that various ancient traditions of medicine, like Ayurveda and like Chinese five elements as part of traditional Chinese medicine and all of that, they look at the body and the environment in terms of things like how cold, how hot, how damp, how dry. And when your body is cold and damp and you're in a cold and damp environment, that's not great either. So it's perfectly natural to want to go to somewhere hot and dry to really improve that. So that's quite interesting. What I've also noticed is that people who try and most of us do this to some extent or another, but people who try to live their summer lifestyle in winter in the UK, that's where people tend to get into trouble and wear themselves out, because the days aren't as long, which means we don't have as much light. And our whole bodies respond to that, and we're supposed to rest more and do less. That's how we're supposed to live. And yet lifestyles don't allow for that. Certainly a lot of most jobs probably and working environments and schools don't seem to make any adjustments for that at all. And then on top of all of that, we still try and maybe do the same kinds of activity, exercise, visiting people, socializing, sometimes trying to force a similar diet all the way through the seasons as well. And it just doesn't work, and it wears people out, and then people get depressed that they're not feeling as great, even though they're doing all the same stuff, and actually it's because they're doing all the same stuff.
How interesting. So what came to mind was the fact that, of course, some animals go into hibernation in the winter, which is an extreme, but actually you're saying that there's a sort of a mild version of that that we actually should maybe be doing as well, which is sort of, you know, just bringing things down, shutting down a bit for the winter and coming to again in the spring.
Completely, absolutely. Again, not stagnating, not freezing, but certainly calming things down. And where in the summer, so I mentioned before about really wanting more salads in the summer and more warming foods in the winter. This is part of it, because in the summer we have more energy to digest raw foods. There's heat, so cooling foods feel really good. But in the winter, there's less heat, there's less light. So let's put some more heat into our foods. Let's bring some more warmth into our bodies that way. And cooking foods starts the process of breaking them down, so they're generally a bit easier to digest. So we're asking our bodies to do less in terms of digesting as well.
So that preference for those kind of foods at the different times of year is a kind of intuitive knowing, in a way, that that's our needs.
Yeah. And even at other times of year, you know, I've worked with many people over the years who have some kind of illness or condition, which means that their bodies are colder and damper than is ideal. And they're trying to eat lots of salads and raw foods and juices because that's what they think is the healthiest thing to do, and feeling terrible on it. And what they're really craving is soups and stews because their body is in British winter mode, even if it's summer. So it's listening to our bodies within the seasons as well.
And in the past, those people were, if they were in the right wealth bracket, would have been encouraged to go off on a health tour to Italy or something in order to be warmer.
Yeah, and up the top of the mountains where there's more light. And definitely.
Interesting. Okay, so now can we talk about the ways in which we in the UK have sought to lessen the effects of the seasons that we may dislike? So we've talked about people who try and avoid winter altogether. But then there's central heating, air conditioning, lots of other developments that far more of us turn to. What effects might those be having on us?
Yeah, well, there's pros and cons because if we were all super healthy and well nourished and not massively stressed, then living a more outdoor life would be feasible and probably really healthy to do. Maybe seeking kind of more shelter, and more kind of clothing to warm us up, more, you know, burning more fires, that kind of thing. But in this time that we live in a very polluted environment, and lots of different kinds of stresses piled on all of the time that I don't think we've really had enough time to evolve to deal with. And in that situation, I think maybe we do need to give ourselves more support through the winter in terms of things like shelter and heating. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. But if you're just indoors all of the time with the heating up all of the time, then that's something else again. So there's some kind of, and it's going to be different for everybody, but there's some kind of sweet spot or sweet range where we're getting a sense of what the seasons are like, but we're also getting the warmth and shelter and protection that we need. And I guess that's that range, that sweet range has shifted as we've changed the way we live in society. And
I think so, yeah. I mean, what came to my mind is that many years ago, I don't know, maybe 30 years ago, I went trekking in the Himalayas and we had a guide with us. And during the course of several days going up through the mountains, myself and my wife, we went from every single piece of clothing we got, down jackets, the whole lot, down to absolutely the minimum we could get away with vest, T-shirts and all the rest of it. And our guide, he wore his same flip-flops, string vest, cotton shirt and trainer pants, something like that, you know, just really casual clothes. And I thought, I wonder if we'd survive if we did that, you know. But I sort of thought, we must have gone a bit soft with all our heated living.
We definitely have gone a bit soft. And we are much more adaptable and resilient than we sometimes give ourselves credit for. But equally, we do also need to acknowledge when we need to be a bit kinder to ourselves as well. And I think it's as long as we carry on having these discussions and asking these questions with an element of curiosity rather than kind of self-criticism or self-shame, because, you know, we could be sitting here at the moment going, oh my goodness, am I just, you know, really doing myself a disservice by having the heating on for a bit today, or by putting an extra jumper on, or by doing this. It's not about that. It's not about, I don't know, it's not a competition. Actually exploring that, and there's been this huge trend to follow the Wim Hof methods as well, and sea swimming throughout the seasons, and working with the kind of ice baths and extremes of temperature in that way. And it's interesting to explore all of those without feeling like we have to do it to prove something to ourselves or to others, or that that's definitely the only way to be healthy.
Right. Yeah, it's funny you should bring that up. This immediately came to my mind as well, this cold water swimming. It's like, don't take me there. I hate cold water, right? Do plenty of other things. You can find me out on my bike in the most disgusting weather, you know, or whatever it is. But, you know, cold water swimming, no thanks, not without a wetsuit anyway. So,
you know, I love it. But the thing that puts me off, well, there's two things that put me off doing the whole sea swimming through the winter thing. The first is I love it when I'm in there, but coming out again, I want to be able to get very warm and very dry very quickly. So if I had a house on the beach, I would probably do it more. But also the sea can be so rough that you can't actually get a good swim in. And that's what I love most about it. But I do sometimes feel like I'm letting the menopausal side down by not sea swimming every day of the winter, because that's the thing at the moment. And you know, it's good to remind myself that I'm not letting anybody down, because there's so much that I can do to support my health, and I don't have to do it all. I certainly don't have to do that if I don't want to. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm not letting anybody down. I'm sticking with no cold water, thanks.
Brilliant.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
The picture that's emerging from the studies of circadian rhythms is the old one of nature knows best. I sort of call this common sense approach to health. Good mental and physical health results from regular immersion in nature, as opposed to spending the whole time sitting in an air-conditioned, artificially lit office, for example. Sufficient sleep at the appropriate time, wholesome natural food with all the natural benefits it can bestow, all eaten at the appropriate time, the list goes on. Of course, the seasonal cycles differ depending on where about on the planet you are. Completely different in North Africa to Iceland, for example. So do you know if our personal seasonal cycles, if I can call them that, depend on where we grew up, or if they were handed down to us, genetic, or indeed if they're completely adaptable?
Oh, again, I don't know that there's been much research on that, but I do believe that we are adaptable. You know, if we're living in these centrally heated buildings and we have that, you know, we're fortunate enough to have that kind of shelter and protection, but actually getting outdoors every day to feel what's actually going on in our environment, I think is really important. But we do very much respond to that in the same way that the seasons aren't the same every year. Some years we have really icy winters, some years they're milder and wetter, some years we have really hot summers, some years they're milder and wetter. We go for a lot of mild and wet in this country, but yeah, we respond to what's going on accordingly. And at the same time, when it's different to the mild and wet that we're expecting, it can wobble us out a little bit as well. So I think there is also the influence of where we've grown up. And although I've not seen any specific research on that, you know, I've been working with people for 20 years and I take really detailed case histories from everybody I work with. That's probably, I should imagine, thousands of people by now. And many of them, many, many, many of them grow up outside of the UK. And it's always very interesting to see the point at which because not everybody I work with lives in the UK, but those who do, the point at which they moved here, what happens to their health?
Yeah.
And that might be as a result of environment and weather. It might be as a result of dietary changes because different foods are available. It might be because they've moved here for work, so their work pattern is different, or, you know, various other things that, you know, environment, seasons aren't the only influence, and yet they will be one influence. And I do, there's often something that changes.
Yeah.
So I do find that really interesting. And vice versa as well. I've worked with people who live abroad who grew up in the UK and have moved to different climates. And it can take a while to settle into that new climate and figure out how our bodies are supposed to respond to that. But really, that's, you know, we've talked about the circadian rhythms and the seasonal cycles. We also have our life cycles. So we have our childhood where we're growth. We have that transition of puberty, which is a bit like spring.
Right.
We have our active lifetime, where we are fertile and supposedly productive, although many people would argue that we can be just as, if not more, productive when fertile time's finished, but on different levels. And then we have that menopause or midlife transition, which is a little bit like autumn, actually. And then we go into, you know, those of us who are lucky to go into older years beyond that. And some people have other transitions through pregnancy as well. And at each of those different times, our bodies change and we have to get used to a new way of being and a new way of supporting and nourishing ourselves, that's determined by what's going on inside our bodies and how that's also interacting with the immediate environment. So we do have lots of opportunities in life, or lots of situations in life, where we need to just check in and change the way that we're nourishing ourselves, because what we were doing a few days ago or a few weeks ago or a few years ago might not now be appropriate. So a shift from moving from one country to another is very similar, but we are adaptable and we are resilient as long as we keep checking in and we're honest with ourselves about what we need and what's going on with our bodies.
Well, I was thinking of the adaptability that's required for, you know, somebody to move from Iceland to North Africa. What the difference in living in a place where you can at one end of the spectrum have days that go on virtually all 24 hours, or equally nights that go on all 24 hours, to go into a place where it's always sunny, you know, things just carry on as usual. It's massively different, isn't it? If you literally spent 40 years living in one of those and you move to the other, the adaptation that you're having to go through, when you take into account all the things you've already told us about the effects these things have on us, it's massive, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's massive physically, emotionally, psychologically. There'll be a lot going on there. So we need to understand what kind of support we each need as individuals to help us through that. Otherwise, it's going to be really tough.
Okay, so look, you're a nutritionist. We've got to get on to talk about the nutrition side particularly, okay? So, as you pointed out, we seem to naturally change our eating preferences for the seasons. What's known about this dietary cycle? And you've got some recommendations for people to support their well-being and meet the challenges of the seasons.
Yeah, well, the absolute easiest, okay, easiest isn't the right word. I'm going to change that. The most effective and reliable way is to just develop a way of listening to your own body so that it can tell you what it needs in every moment. And then you don't need a nutritionist or a book or anyone else telling
Sounds
you what
good,
to eat.
Good, but you've got to tell people how to do that, of course.
Yeah. So that's why it's not easy. That's the tricky bit. And it's practice. It's really practice. And just kind of being present in your own body. So any mindfulness practice, whether it's mindful eating, mindful meditation, mindful breathing, mindful walking, anything that helps reconnect you with your body, with what your senses are feeling, with what you're experiencing right now, and sitting comfortably with that. Anything that will help do that will help you to really settle into your body and hear what it wants to eat as well. Now, for some people, that's simply a case of, and I've used the word simply again, but I'm not sure that's the right word. But for some people, that's a case of practice, just a regular practice over many years. And even then, some days there'll be a sense of, well, I don't know. And then other days there will be really strong, oh yeah, I really want this today. For other people, that's not so easy. If for some people that have been quite kind of severely traumatized, it's not going to be, it's going to take a lot more psychological support to get to the place where you can settle into your body, right, and be comfortable there and to listen.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
And I assume you've got to learn to discern between what you need and what you might be addicted to, or just, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. What are you craving because you need it? What are you craving because it's one of those, like a sugar craving or a...
Built to promote addiction, yes.
Yeah. And again, they do feel different, and it's really hard to describe how they feel different. And there's also a bit of an overlap between them that I'll go on to. But you know, for me, sometimes I can feel the difference because it comes from a slightly different part of my body. Or it might feel, there might be a sense of calmness that comes with one feeling that doesn't come with another, even in the craving itself. So there is a slight difference, but there's also an overlap. And sometimes, you know, we can crave, I'll use sugar as an example. Sometimes we can crave sugar because it's a kind of, it's a physical, it's a need as well as an addiction. So yeah, it can be muddy. But isn't life anyway?
Isn't it just? Yeah.
And it's not, yeah, so it's not always the kind of, we always have choices as to how to respond to that. And that all choices can be appropriate. There's no one choice that's always the right choice there. So it makes it quite complex, but that, again, that's why I like to eventually bring it back to, okay, let's see if we can get to a place where we can feel our way through this, because that's actually going to be more helpful in the long term. In the short term, there are guidelines, and what I show are always guidelines because they're kind of a direction to try and play with and explore and see if it works for you.
Right.
But at this time of year, for example, that transition from late summer into autumn. So again, just as a reminder, what I'm focusing on a lot with people at the moment is how to feel grounded and earthed and comfortable and safe enough to actually let go and move fluidly forward into a new time of year or a new time of life, without kind of frantically freezing up or trying to hold on out of fear to things. So foods that help with that are foods that are grown close to the earth. The root vegetables and squashes that are more in season this year. And it's wonderful how we seem to thrive and get lots out of whatever's in season at the moment. I think that's because we've evolved to thrive on what's around us right now. So it's fantastic. There's so many different kinds of squash around at the moment. I had something called a turban squash this week, which looks very exotic.
There's all sorts of weird and wonderful squashes around, aren't there?
Aren't there? Yeah. I've also got some turnips and, just classics like carrots, potatoes, all of those kinds of things. And they're all starchy and carby, but that's okay. I mean, we're not going to eat buckets of them, but just to kind of roast or boil and mash some of those or stew them, make them into soups. It does have that kind of more earthing, grounding kind of energy about it. Plus, a lot of them are quite sweet, not sweet like a chocolate bar, but a natural earthy sweetness, which can provide us with a gentle source of comfort and sweetness rather than a frantic, give me 10 tons of chocolate now because I need some joy in my life. So it's kind of, that gentle kind of sense of contentment, I guess. And a lot of them are colours, so that going back to the Chinese five elements, they talk about the colours yellow and orange at that late summer time of year, that gorgeous golden light that we get from the sun towards the end of the day as well. But many of these squashes and carrots and other root vegetables are also those colours that can help, yellows and oranges that can just help, just give us it's almost like giving us a colour hug, if you like. It's those nice, warm, comforting colours. And all of these things help us to feel held in a way that means we can just let go of what we don't need anymore. Mm. And then moving into autumn, there are also foods and ways of eating that can help us let go of things. So again, if you look at the Chinese five elements, we're moving from earth element into metal element. And metal element foods are the more pungent foods. So things like garlic, onions, mild spices, and they all get us sweating a little bit more, maybe help ease the transition of our stools, our poo. Get the mucus flowing a little bit more just to help us to release. So they're a really nice combination at the moment as we're going through this transition. So this week I've roasted that turban squash with yellow onions and garlic. And I had that warm for dinner one evening with a few other bits and pieces. And then today, for lunch, I made a warm salad. Mm. I really like this transitional types of year. So we've got the vibrancy and the freshness and the all the nutrients in the salad, and all the vitamin C from raw salad, but warmed up with some of that warmed squash and onions and garlic, and also some warmed up lentils. So it's nice to appreciate that bridge that we've got going from into different seasons and work with that rather than thinking, oh, should I have salad or should I have something warm? Well, I can do both.
Right. Okay. Well, look, you're not just a nutritionist, of course. You're a nutritionist who supports people with cancer predominantly. And we haven't got much time left, but can you just steer all of what we just talked about and just say as briefly as you can how you feel this can particularly play into supporting people with cancer?
Oh, quite beautifully, actually, because when I've been talking about people who have a colder, damper constitution, that's often people with cancer.
Okay.
And so the way of eating I've just described is often actually really helpful throughout the year, because we can think of the body being in a position where it needs a bit more warmth, a bit more comfort, and it also needs to let go and shift things. And having that warmth and comfort can help to let go and shift things rather than try and force a change or be... I mean, some people work really well working with extremes, but most people actually benefit from a gentler, more grounded approach. And when somebody has a cancer diagnosis, it's a very scary place. So we can freeze more easily. But remember, when we freeze, we can stagnate. And in that moment of freezing, we can also panic and just want to do everything all at once. And there's often a sense that we have to do it all now because there's no time. But actually, there's often a lot more time than people realise. And that gentle, comforting approach of thinking of it as that transition and putting those warming, comforting foods in and transitioning, letting go gently, is often much more appropriate and kind and useful.
Fantastic. So think autumn. Okay, fantastic summary. Thank you very much. We're going to have to end it there. Very interesting discussion. Thanks so much, Kirsten. Another first for the Yes to Life show. I don't think we've ever talked about that sort of thing before. So I'm sure much more is going to be found out about it in the future as it becomes more on the radar of more people. So thanks for bringing it up.
Oh, thanks. So you've asked such brilliant questions. I'm just going to go and do loads more research now and look it all up. But I do know in the Chinese five elements and systems like that, they've been observing for thousands of years, as have, you know, pagan approaches and you know, every system that's been around for thousands of years, that's how long we've been observing this stuff. So the science may or may not need to catch up. There may be things out there that I'm not aware of yet,
See. Okay, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Bye, Robin.
Bye.
As with most things to do with health, clearly there's a lot more to it than meets the eye, and we're right at the very beginning of understanding this territory. If you enjoyed our chat today, you'll pretty certainly like Kirsten's recent book, Nutrition Brought to Life. Find out more at kirstenchick.com. Thanks for listening today. Please do join me again next week for another Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.